Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. Autumn semester 2009, this is Business Finance FIL 240, Section 6. Lecture 14, delivered on October 1, 2009. The title of this lecture is Problems with Basic Present and Future Values.
Today, problems with basic present values and future values. When I gave you this formula the last time, I noted that there was actually a variant on this formula, and you can use one formula or you can use both formulas. Now, here we go. The first one is that the future value of a lump sum of money, which is all we're going to talk about for this exam. Later, we'll talk about annuities, streams of money, one after the other, periodic. But right now, the future value of a lump sum of money is its present value times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. It's not a difficult thing to use. And then, of course, if you want, you can rearrange the formula and say that the present value is the future value over 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. Otherwise, you can also write that as PV equals FV times 1 plus R to the negative N. A denominator to a power is the same as that numerator to the negative of the power. You can do it either way. Just make sure you put that, hit that plus minus key after you've keyed in the exponent on your calculator. One way or t'other, though, these are the two basic formulas. And then there's that little trick that I showed you at the end, finding an effective yield, which we'll get to here in a minute. But just as a basic problem, you invest $800 at 10% compounded quarterly, how much will you have in 6 years? And again, I can't emphasize enough, don't make these complicated. And to my dying day, I will recommend just saying, all right, if for every problem, the parameters are going to be the PV, the FV, the PV, the R, and the D. And for this problem, the only real thing is, well, do we know a future value or do we know the value now? And in this case, well, we have the value now. We want to know the future value. So we would put a big question mark on the future value. And then the present value is $800. And the periodic interest rate is going to be 0.10 over quarterly means four times a year. Now, when you do this, I would strongly recommend that you not estimate it. Put it into the calculator just at 0.10 divided by 4. Because otherwise, with ones that are repeating decimals, you can get rounding error that will kill you with long-term cash flow problems. And the D here, N, I wrote that wrong. And the number of periods would be, in this case, 6 times 4, or 24 quarters in 6 years. Now, this one you should do out, because multiplying in an exponent, you have to put it in parentheses, and if you forget to, you get a messy number, you get a wrong answer. So I would recommend that the number of periods you multiply out before you pump it into the calculator. And then from there, it's just a matter of stuffing it in, and make sure you get my answer, okay? Because that's what's going to be graded, is my answer on the exam, against my answer on the exam. So in this case, we have the future value equals the present value of $800 times 1 plus R over D, 0.10 over 4, to the D time, to the number of periods, which is in this case 24. Notice again that I'll do the 10.10 divided by 4 as I'm running the problem out on my calculator. But I will do the quarters. I will do the period, number of periods beforehand. And flogging that out, and again, I strongly recommend that you just make absolutely sure you can get what I get. Hoping, of course, that I get the right answer here, is it's 800 times, open parentheses, 1 plus 0.10 divided by 4, close parentheses, y to the x, 24, 1446.98. $1,446.98. And again, always, always, at the end of the problem, please do a reality check. Does this number look right? If I'd got a number that was negative, that would have been a little suspicious. If I got a number in the tens of thousands, that would have been suspicious. The nice thing is that usually, if you make a mistake, your formula blows up on you and you get a ridiculous answer. So it's like, just stop for a second and say, does this answer make sense to me? If it looks like it makes sense, you're probably in the right ballpark. You might even get a partial credit even if you got it wrong, if it's in the right ballpark. But one thing I really recommend also, run the calculation as a single string through your calculator. Don't stop and hit equals. Try to just keep it going through the problem. 800 times, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.10 divided by 4, close parenthesis, y to the x, 24, equals. Just try to carry it that way. Because when you hit the equal sign, you might get things that you don't want to happen. Just get it all in a single algebraic string. And I don't know how much that was that's being emphasized these days in high school or in math courses, that single string effort. But I do see people trying to hit the equal sign along the way, write down parts of the answer along the way. It's dangerous to do that. You get rounding errors. You can also get unexpected completions. The calculator thinks you want to complete something that you didn't want to complete. That's a basic problem. I can ask that on the exam, something very easy like that. That means that you won't get a zero on the exam. That means that it's maybe worth having mom put it up in the fridge. Now, we'll do a present value problem. And if you get this one right, mom might put doilies around it on the fridge. Okay. How much would you have to invest now to have $1,200 in 4 years if you can lock your money in at 6% compounded semi-annually? This is the flip side of the problem. We've got the FV, the PV, the R, and the N. Those are always Always. It doesn't matter what formula, which one of the formulas it is. That's what you want to do. Okay? And so here we're going to crank this out, and we're going to work out the numbers. In this case, we know the future value. We know how much our target is out there. It's $1,200. It's going to be $1,200 is our future value. But it is the now money that we don't know. We don't know the now money, the present. We are asking, how much do you have to put in now? That's the question, is the, what is the now? And our periodic interest rate in this case is going to be 6%, that's 0.06, over semi-annually is 2. And again, I recommend that you don't do these divisions. Just put it in as 0.06 over 2. And for God's sake, remember to turn it into a decimal. Boy, you will get big-ass numbers if you do it with the 6 instead of the 0.06. And the N here would be, in this case, we have 4 years, and we're compounding twice a year. So that means that there will be 8 compounding periods. And you do execute that calculation, because that's going to be an exponent, and you can, it's easy to make a mistake if you try to multiply in an exponent. If you forget the parentheses, you're dead. Okay, now, you can do it any one of these formulas I wrote up here. It does not matter. If, as long as you just put the numbers in right, you're going to get an answer that should be right. And I'm just going to do it, oh, I don't know. I'll do it by PV equals FV times 1 plus R to the negative N. That's the fastest one. It doesn't matter. I could put it in this way and then just divide. And if I do that, I will have the present value equals the future value, which is 1,200, times 1 plus, times 1 plus 0.06 over 2 to the 8th power. Oh, to the negative day. To the negative 8th power. And as I said, you could do it any of those, the other two ways. But this way, it's a preference, whatever. Calculating it out, you would go 1,200 times open parenthesis 1 plus 0.06 divided by 2, close the parenthesis, y to the x, 8, and then hit that pause neg button down there, plus minus, equals. Don't forget to put that pause neg button. I'm probably preaching to you, you already know this, but the positive negative button goes in after you put in a number. You have to flag most calculators that a number is negative after you've actually told it the number. It has to do with the difference between binary and unary operations and all that. And if I... Well, that sucked. Let me try that again. I'm talking and chewing gum at the same time. 1,200 times 1 plus 0.06 divided by 2, close parentheses, y to the x, what was that? 8 pos neg, 947.29. We get $947.29. Okay. Again, reality check. You should put in less than $1,200. It should come out to be a number below $1,200. I mean, if you have to put in more than $1,200 to get out $1,200 in 4 years, you've got a bad bank. Bad bank. So at least we know it's on the right side, and it's, you're thinking to yourself, well, does that make sense? Yeah, geez, I put in 4 years, and I have to put in almost a grand for 4 years to get out $1,200. That kind of sucks. Yeah, here the interest rate is actually not that great. It's not a spectacular interest rate. Okay, so that's mostly why this is. You'll notice sometimes it's not a whole lot. You notice here in this problem, for 6 years, all I had to do was kick in $800 to get it almost to double. That's just because of the nature of this one. We had compounding quarterly. We had a much better interest rate, 10% rather than 6%. And so that's why there's some difference. The interest rate really does drive these problems. Now, here's the third kind of problem that I could ask you about. It has to do, it's just one of those effective yields kind of problems. And I could ask you this, what is the effective yield on 12% compounded quarterly? Now, don't let me bluff you if I ask that in a bigger question. I could have asked that for either of those two previous questions. What's the effective yield of the account? I could have done it in one of those questions, but I didn't. Here it's just raw, pure, and it's so easy, it just hurts to do it. And I'm just going to write up what you would do. Just take, open a parenthesis, 1 plus 0.12 over 4 to the 4th power. That's all you do. 1 plus the annual divided by the compoundings to the compoundings. That's all you ever do for this. It's almost too stupid to write a formula for. I could write a formula for it, but I mean, that's all you do. And I forgot, you got to subtract 1. And if you want to turn it into a percent, then times it by 100% because it will come out to be a decimal. But it's that easy, though. It really is that easy. It's just 1 plus the annual divided by the compoundings to the number of compoundings. And then don't forget to take off the 1. Don't forget to, because what comes out if you forget to take off the 1 looks sort of like an interest rate. So watch it with that. If I do that, I get 1 plus 0.12 divided by 4, close the parentheses, and then I take that to the 4th power, minus 1 equals times 100, 12.55%. Yeah. Don't do that. I'm going to tell you why here. I'm going to tell you why. As a rule, if it's a percentage, stated as a percentage, 2 decimals. Okay. Now, there's an interesting trick you can do with this. And I mentioned it. I just got last time. But you see that effective yield there, 12.55%? You could actually use that for a present value or a future value problem that was with 12% compounded quarterly. You wouldn't have to do the 1 plus the annual over the interest rate to the number of compounding periods. You could actually do a problem just straight 1.1255 to the number of years. Instead of 1 plus 0.12 over 4 to 4 times the number of years, you could do a problem with just 1 plus 0.1255 to the number of years. Doing the effective yield essentially takes care of that compounding effect. You've done that already. And that's why I get a little bitchy about that thing with the rounding on the decimals, because you can actually use this for later calculations, so you want to preserve as much of the accuracy as possible if you wanted to use it that way. Okay? Yeah, go ahead. Talk to me. Oh, you mean 0.0000? Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But you won't run into that too often, though. With an effective yield, just be suspicious. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Because there's a way that you can screw up the calculation. And if you screw up the calculation, you'll get an exact number. If you get an exact number in an effective yield, you really be suspicious. You go back and do it again. I'm glad you brought that up, because I remember that's happened with me a couple of times. I left a parenthesis out or something, and I got a perfect number. And that's, wait a minute, that won't happen with exponents. You get all kinds of weird stuff happening. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm going to show you one last problem. I'm going to show you one last problem with these. Now, everything I've shown you up to this point, there's an equivalent with annuities, with periodic cash flow. The formulas are a little more complicated, but you can do it all with calculators. What I'm going to show you here, you can do with a calculator if it's a lump sum, but if you try to do it with you couldn't do it with a calculator, just a formula way, if it were an annuity. Let me show you this. You invested $500 in an account in 5 years you had $850 in the account. You know the interest rate was being compounded quarterly. But you don't know the interest rate. Know the annual rate, but you don't know the annual rate. 5 years. Now, again, this is something you can do with lump sums. Just algebraically. With annuities, can you do it with annuities? I don't think you can just by straight algebra. I don't think you can, no. But with annuities, you can do this. Here's the deal. Let's just set up the equation. Let's just put the equation together here from the FV. This is the hardest problem of all. But let's just do that. FV equals PV times 1 plus R over all to the nth. Here we go. The future value. I know what that is, right? It's $850 equals the present value. I know the present value, $500. And that would be times 1 plus, but I don't know the annual interest rate. So I would say that the annual interest rate, I'll just call that a big fat old R, but I know that it's going to be divided by 4. To the 4 times the number of years. Four times five, sorry. And I just go write that as a 20. And I'll write a little 4 times 5 there, okay? Okay. Well, that's kind of... Let me ask you. Do you know how to do a problem like this? Are you comfortable with this? Go ahead.
Square root.
It's called the 20th root.
Yeah, the 20th.
You can do it that. Yeah, absolutely. Now, however, if you don't have one of those nth root buttons, it's straightforward to do. First thing you're going to have to do, though, here is I'm going to have to rearrange this a little bit here. I've got 850, and I'm going to divide the 500. 850 divided by 500. What the hell is that? What is 850 divided by? 1.7? Really? Okay. I knew that. Now, notice that in a problem like this, everything is about stripping the problem down until the target is standing naked. And in this case, I'll have 1.7 equals the quantity 1 plus r over 4 to the 20th power. Now, the trick is, you have to take the 20th root. You don't have to do the 20th root, though. Just take both sides to the 1/20th power on your calculator. So I can say that 1.7 to the 1/20th power is 1 plus r over 4. And you're saying, duh-huh, have you ever seen that trick before? 1/20th is the same as saying the 20th root. And on your calculator, don't bust your butt with this. Just key in 1.7 y to the x, 20, and hit the reciprocal button, 1 over x button. That's how you can do ginormous roots. Just take it to the regular 20th and then just hit the reciprocal button. It'll hit that 20, drop, flip it over, and then you're in business. And you'll get some number. What do you get when you do that? Give me 4 decimals. We're going to do this one estimate. What do you get?
1.026.
Really? I guess that makes sense. And do make sure you can do this. Clear. 1.7. Yeah, you're right. Huh? Equals 1 plus r over 4. Subtract 1 from both sides. You get 0.0269 equals r over 4 times both sides by 4. And you will get that your annual interest rate comes out to be 10.75%, approximately. You actually backed into the interest rate. You just calculated a yield. On a debt instrument. You knew how much you put it invested. You knew how much you got out. You knew the compoundings. You just found your yield on it. That's what you did there. We'll do more of these, but this is sort of like my quick first shot at it. Okay? Now, will I ask that on the exam? Stay tuned. Now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the exam. I've shown you some present value problems, future value problems, effective yield, finding an interest rate that is hidden inside. So here, structure of the exam. Start off, 10 multiple choice questions. A couple of them are true or false, okay? But they're multiple choice, multiple guess for some of you. Multiple choice questions, 10 of them. Then I've got a matching section. 5 matching, 10 multiple choice, then 5 matching. The matchings are not meant to fog your brain. They're meant to give you something that would you can probably get. Build up your confidence a little bit. That's what I'm trying to do so that I can shatter your hopes and dreams later. No, that's not true. Okay, and then we go to a calculation section. In the calculation section, you will have among the problems, I'm not going to tell you exactly what I'm going to ask. Well, there's going to be present value, future value. Okay? Stay frosty. Know how to do them because they can drag you down and wreck you. You've got 60 minutes to take this exam. Stay frosty. Don't start flipping out when you see these. Know how to attack the problem. I'm not going to give you super monster hard stuff. It's just straight up, just like I did here. Just walk them through. Just know your mechanics and you can get them done in not that much time. Then I'm going to do problem with, like I did on, was that quiz two, where I give you parts of a financial statement, and you have to back in and find the other parts of it. You remember that one where you had the two columns and all that kind of stuff, and it drove you crazy? I'll do one of those. It won't be two columns. It'll just be one column. Okay? No, that wasn't ratios.
Did we get that back?
Did you? Yeah. Yeah, you got that back. Don't scare me like that. I'll do one of those. And then I'm going to, in there, I'll give you financials, and I will ask you for a few ratios. You're not going to calculate lots of ratios. I won't ask for DuPont. I'm just going to ask for a scattering of ratios. Just some things, okay? And now, and then I'm going to have you calculate just a basic coefficient of variation. Just a coefficient of variation, a risk, okay? I won't have you do a bunch of them, but I'll have you do something. The mu, you'll have to get the mu, the sigma, and then the CV. And then the last part of the exam is 5 one-sentence answers to questions I pose or to directions I give. For example, state the relationship between risk and return. What is the effect of fixed costs on volatility, on risk? Those kinds of questions. Use complete sentences. You lose points if you say because or I think. Just use a complete, straight, objective sentence. Show me that you know what you're doing, because then when you go out there to get jobs and you're in your environment, you show that same kind of confidence. You don't want to be an asshole, but you want to show that you know what you're doing. And that's, this is where you begin to do that. Don't say, I think, or I believe, or I feel. And don't say, cause, or B/C. Write complete sentences like professionals for me. Now, the way I do one of these exams is I write it up, and then I take it myself. My assumption is that if I can get, it's too long if it takes me more than 30 minutes for a 60-minute exam. So I write it up. You should be able to knock this thing out in 60 minutes. It should actually, I try to target a 60-minute exam so that you've got, it takes you about 50 minutes, and then you've got about 10 minutes to go through and look at what you've done. Take the time to go back through. Also, attack on an exam, and I'm lecturing you, I know, you probably already know this, and you think that I'm a jerk for keeping this up. Don't plow an exam straight through. Hit the easy stuff first. Get that out of the way, because there could be a problem. I'm not saying there will be, but there could be something I ask that would take you quite a while to think your way through or to work your way through. If you hit that one and that one's the third problem, well, you've wasted the rest of the exam. You're building points. That's what this is all about, is getting the as many as you can of the questions done and get them right. In the multiple choice and the matching section, there's no partial credit, obviously. In the calculation section, there's only minimal partial credit. And it has to do with the fact that you can't make a mathematical mistake in business and then say, oops, my bad. And I should talk about making mathematical mistakes. So, and then in the answer section, these are not your opinion. These are statements. And so there would be very little room for partial credit in a statement. It's not, well, is your opinion valid? No, I'm wanting you to tell me specific, precise information. Okay? Now, do you have any questions for me? Yes.
Would you say to study heavier the material from the book or from your lectures?
Yes, from my lectures. look, I'm not never ever going to ask you something that was in the book that I didn't bring up in class, ever. I don't do that. That doesn't mean you just use the book for toilet paper, but you use the book to reinforce what I've taught you. Sometimes I am the greatest teacher you've ever had. I admit it. But sometimes the book might add a little bit of clarity to something that I've said. There's no doubt about it. There's some days when I walk out of class, so I say, what the hell did I just say in there? Okay, so it's don't just walk away from the book. God knows I put that up online for you with my own two hands. But if you're going to focus, focus on what I've taught you. But make sure your notes are complete. You've got the podcast. Go back through. Listen to every word. Listen to them while you're eating dinner, while you're on the toilet, while you're having sex. Indeed, listen to them loudly in a restaurant. Yes.
Showing work
in a class like this, if you show you in working out those mathematical questions, show me the work, okay? Because there is a possibility that I'll give partial credit. Obviously, if you make a mistake and you've shown me no work, there is no partial credit. But if you make a mistake and you've shown me work and I can find out quickly where it is, yeah, there might be hope. Also, keep in mind that when I do things like this, even with those CVs that you did, I actually go through scenario analysis and say, what would be the answers if this mistake was done and this mistake was done? So I have a sense of where mistakes could happen and how much value those mistakes would have in knocking off from the main thing. So in that number four, quiz four, that last one, the answer was 70.74%. There were two wrong answers that I gave partial credit for. It was about 73% and about 75%. I know how you made that mistake, and I know that that was a mistake that I did not make clear in class, something a few of you did. For one thing, some of you actually were taking taxes when the income was negative. That was the things like that. So I will know a few of the mistakes, but it's best if you show me work along the way. Go ahead.
I didn't get partial credit, and I put 75%.
You did? Well, I must have not liked you. Well, show me, okay? Yeah, show me. I try to. Sometimes if I've had too much coffee, I get really jittery, and I just. That's my excuse. But yeah, and go ahead. That's part of, you're getting 4x6 card, both sides, okay? That's what you've got to put everything on, and it's your choice what you put on there. You could put the Battle Hymn of the Republic on there if you wish, or you could put relevant information on there. That's where the information goes. Don't try to cheat and write extra information on the calf of your leg or some stupid thing like that. There are very creative in trying to write information on body parts. And so don't push it. Don't try that. Just whatever it is that you think you need, it's going to be there on that card. That's it. Okay? And don't write in micro pen. I had some guy last semester. He actually made it on a Word document, and then he had shrunk it down. He holds up his hand and he says, what's that right there? I don't, get away from me. I'm old. I can't even see my food in front of me. Anyway, any other questions? Yeah.
Could you give us the answers to quiz number three?
I didn't. Oh, yeah, I'll put those up. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And by the way, there was something stupid in quiz number three. I wish I should put it up on the board. I didn't take off any credit. I just threw away the DuPont because the DuPont doesn't work. And I also gave everyone a half a point extra credit on it. So there was 5% more than what you count your numbers off. For two reasons. One was, did you notice the columns were reversed from the first sheet to the second sheet? And that got people confused. But there was also something very weird in those ratios. When I transcribed them from Excel and just imported them into Word to put on the quiz, a very crucial number changed in the 2006 column. And it creates a weirdness in the DuPont. It makes the DuPont wrong. And I can't figure out why the number changed. But if you look at the carefully at the 2006 column in the balance sheet, there's a mistake in it. There's an error. Yes, total assets does equal total liabilities plus owner's equity. But there is an error. You have to look carefully to find it. But it blows the DuPont. Because it's not, the accounting is not right. And I cannot figure out how you can link an Excel sheet where it's right to a Word document where those same numbers are transcribed and a number changes, but it did in this case. I don't know if any of you notice it, but there's a number that's wrong, and it makes both the total assets wrong and the total liabilities and owner's equity wrong. So you get a little extra credit there for that, but I'm not going to post the on the online. You won't see the DuPont for it done because the DuPont just blows apart because of that incorrect number there. And I still don't know how that happened. But anyway, you got 5% extra credit on that quiz 3 because of that strangeness and also because the columns were transcribed. Other questions you have on this? Yeah. The matching is going to be more like definitions. You know, I might give a term. It'll be a terms on one side and then explanations or definitions on the other side, or maybe examples. And they're not hard at all. Just don't blow them. Because if you blow one, then you're probably going to blow two. Okay? And by the way, there will be 5 questions, 6 words, or 6 possible matches, okay? So you'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you'll have A, B, C, D, E, F, G, okay? So there will be 1 extra on there, so that doesn't mean make it perfect match. Okay, now as far as the multiple choice goes, they are generally going to be statements that what is the effect of interest rate of interest expense on volatility? What in God's name? There's some poor son of a bitch in another class. He downloaded a ringtone. That's a fart. I thought, really? You know, I'll bet that really impresses the ladies. But whatever. What is the effect of interest expense on sales volatility? What's the answer to that? What is the effect of interest expense of a fixed interest expense on sales volatility? Oh, come on.
Yeah. It increases. No.
It has no effect. Sales volatility isn't affected. That's interest expense is way down on the income statement. Watch it. I can ask a question like that. It's almost like, no, wait a minute. Think about it. Yeah, interest expense isn't going to affect sales volatility. Because of sales, you're selling stuff. Interest expense is way down there, writing a check to someone near the bottom line after EBIT, after your operating income. Interest expense would affect overall volatility of net income, but it doesn't affect sales volatility at all. Those kinds of things would very likely, I could ask something like that, where I'm actually asking a really basic question, but it seems like it's a very complicated question. And those kinds of questions could be on there. Let me try this one. A stock has a beta of 1.2. Which of the following does that mean? This stock has 120% of the risk of the market. This stock has 120% of the risk of the risk-free rate. This stock has 120% of the risk of the non-diversifiable risk of the market portfolio. This stock has 120% of the total risk of the market portfolio. It has 120% of the non-diversifiable risk of the market portfolio. Which of the following would have the lowest beta? Standard & Poor's 500, Microsoft, a gold mining stock, or a treasury bill? Very good, treasury bill. Very good. Those are the kinds of questions that I would ask. Some of them very straightforward, some of them a little more complicated. The Central Bank of the United States, I could ask questions about, remember I went through banking system and all that. I could talk about ask you a question about the Federal Reserve, along that line. Or I could do this one. What is the relationship between the, here's one that I could, in multiple choice. The price of a one-year treasury bill is $940. What is the yield? And then just give you four possible answers, and then E would be none of the above. And no, I'm not going to tell you the answer to that. Find it yourselves. You got the hang of it? And just make sure that you don't, you study for it. Get a nice nap, night's sleep the night before, and then come in being all perky. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.